This is the second part of an address by Herbert Eustace entitled, Do You Say There Is No God? Subheading, Love Will Heal Death. Since the one mind embraces within itself the whole truth about all there is to person, place and thing, there is no possible chance to escape from person, place and thing. All that appears is mind defining itself to you. Abandon the terrible belief of having a person, a place or a thing that you cannot tolerate. I saw a statement once said to have been made by Mrs. Eddy to the effect, I love. Whom? I love. What? I love. If you love, you can raise the dead. Love will heal death. That is the way I have raised the dead, by love that is above the human. Now, what does love mean? Does it not mean finding that which is, all that is, and proving it? You notice the statement ends with love above the human. Love that has no sense of anything but itself. Love that is oneness with mind, with that which is understanding. St. John said, God is love. Jesus also said, A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another. Is it loving to allow the belief of a destructive fire to reign? Having the power of control in your own thinking, is it loving to tolerate attacks on your government? Are you loving when you let tyrannical usurpation, calling itself a high form of government, continue to go on in various parts of your world? Love embraces within itself all protection and tenderness, and all that means and is good, and it demands that this love be shown forth everywhere. Subheading, The Talking Serpent. Mrs. Eddy once told some friends that the whole of error could be summed up in one word, talking serpent. And then she compared this talking serpent to the moccasin snake, which will not touch a person when he is asleep, but the moment he is awake will attack him. That is what the metaphysician is confronted with today. If this so-called talking serpent of evil can actually sing or talk or charm one into being asleep, it will let him go on without opposition. He is impotent, utterly blind, so long as he is asleep to the dictates of truth, no matter how awake his material eyes may seem to be. The whole of error can truly be summed up in the one phrase, talking serpent, which is the serpent of suggestion that is arguing every minute. It may appear as a person, a place, or a thing, perhaps, that persuades and charms, or it may appear as the desire of one's own volition. If that serpent can charm you as a Christian Scientist into indolence without activity or purpose, you can go smoothly along with the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name upon your forehead. But if you launch your bark upon the ever agitated but helpful waters of truth, you will encounter storms. Your good will be even spoken of. This is the cross. Take it up and bear it, for through it you win and wear the crown. Pilgrim on earth, your home is heaven. Stranger, thou art the guest of God. For you, there is only one course to choose. You have chosen mind, not suggestion, the mark of the beast. Subheading, Timid Conservatism is absolutely inadmissible. When Jesus was preparing his disciples for the events which were to close his visible demonstration of mind, and was telling them of some of the inhuman things that evil would try to inflict on him, Peter, under the guise of a mistaken sense of friendship, endeavoured to remonstrate with Jesus against permitting the possibility of such an experience, and won from his master the crushing rebuke, "Get thee behind me, Satan, for thou art an offence unto me, for thou savourest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men." As our leader writes, if you venture upon the quiet surface of error, and are in sympathy with error, what is there to disturb the waters? What is there to strip off error's disguise? If you adjust yourself to evil, you may seem for the moment to be in an easier position, but the battle is surely awaiting you up the road. There is no kingly road in Christian science where one can escape passing under the rod of proof, any more than there is such a road in mathematics. The kingdom of heaven is yours, and you have full dominion, but you also have full responsibility, and that is just and right. The error you accept will finally have to be rejected, or mind will not be all in all to you. Subheading: An Experience of Healing. Those of you who have read Adam Dickey's memoirs of Mrs. Eddy may remember the account there given of Mrs. Eddy's healing of Calvin Fry. After most of the household had retired for the night, Mr. Fry was found seated in his chair, apparently unconscious and, as it seemed, dead. Several people in the house were called and tried in every way to arouse him, but to no purpose. Finally, they decided it best to tell Mrs. Eddy. Immediately upon being told, Mrs. Eddy said, "I cannot wait to dress. Go to him and bring him to me at once." Then she took possession of the situation, and speaking with absolute power and authority, told Mr. Fry to awaken and commanded him to defeat the one, the only enemy, malicious suggestion. After insisting upon this for a considerable time, but apparently with no result, she redoubled her efforts, and as the account says, she fairly shouted at him, demanding vehemently that he awake, and he did so. As she writes, "If it becomes necessary to startle mortal mind to break its dream of suffering, vehemently tell your patient that he must awake. Turn his gaze from the false evidence of the senses to the harmonious facts of soul and immortal being. Tell him that he only suffers as the insane suffer from false beliefs. Should you thus startle mortal mind in order to remove its beliefs, afterwards make known to the patient your motive for the shock, showing him that it was to facilitate recovery." End of quotation. Even as the human concept of principle can be known only in the action of its idea or expression, whether in music or in mathematics, so God, divine principle, has no way of showing forth his action except as man. And if man does not show forth God's action, God's power, then there is no God expressed. If you, therefore, do not act as God, how will God be known? Mrs. Eddy acted as mind, just as Jesus did, when he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come forth." He cried with the voice of power and authority, and there is no place where that voice is not heard. When Mr. Fry opened his eyes, the first thing he asked was to be allowed to go on, saying, "I don't want to stay." Mrs. Eddy paused a moment before finishing the problem to say to her friends standing near, "Just listen to that." The healing, of course, was complete. There must be a greater sense of conscious power. If you really accept the fact that there is only one mind and accept that mind as your mind, then it is with that mind that you speak every moment. As our leader writes, to live so as to keep human consciousness in constant relation with the divine, the spiritual, and the eternal is to individualize infinite power, and this is Christian Science. End of quotation. This individualization of infinite power is your privilege as well as your necessity. Subheading: Mr. Kimball's experience. Mr. Edward Kimball told me the following facts, which are known to many, regarding a case he treated and healed. On going to the home of a patient, he found an apparently sightless, unconscious form with eyes already set. To all appearances, the last enemy had accomplished its purpose. To this apparently lifeless form, Mr. Kimball spoke, declaring in substance, "There is nothing that can ever be unconscious, for there is no such condition. For mind, God, the only life, the one consciousness, is omnipresent. And because this is so, I want you to repeat after me what I say. If you cannot say the words audibly, then make your lips move, that I may know you are saying them." Then he repeated over and over that there is only one life, and this life is infinite love, and this is my life. This one infinite life is ever present, and is my life here and now. Finally, the man's lips began to move, and the first thing he voiced, as in the case of Mr. Fry, was the request to be let alone. Nevertheless, he was completely healed. The nature of evil now, as of old, is always to want to be left alone. As we read in the Bible, "Let us alone. What have we to do with thee? Art thou come to destroy us?" If you cease to speak as the voice of God, will not evil have its way? Does it not continually urge you to give up or postpone your mental vigilance by saying, "You'll be better in the morning," or "You'll be better if you do this or that"? It certainly does, as you well know. Are you better if you put off meeting it at once? You know you never are, for behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation, as we read in 2 Corinthians verse 2 of chapter 6. Do not think from these two cases that repetition of any true statement has any value in and of itself. You know that repetition can be just as material as any form of matter. But you do know also that divine insistence is the mental quality of mind which never lets up, and which can appear as oft repeating, though always with understanding as its substance. When this understanding insistence is present, you prove that victory is never absent. Subheading: Facing the Problem. Are we or are we not enlisted to destroy the belief of death? When you destroy disease, you destroy death. If disease seems to have resulted in unconsciousness, are you going to sit down and let it continue? If you believe you cannot control a fire or weather condition, you will believe also that you cannot master so-called death. What then is the use of being a Christian Scientist? if one must go on and accept utter powerlessness over these things. Is mind all in all, or is it not? Mrs. Eddy said, "To me, the reality and substance of being are good and nothing else." Do you believe there is such a condition as unconsciousness? How could there be a presence to you that is not the very presence of mind or of infinite consciousness? Then how could there seem to be an unconscious mortal before you? Is unconsciousness ever present anywhere? Does that apply to everything? Either it applies to everything, or it does not apply to anything. There is no such thing as mind and matter, consciousness and unconsciousness. Because mind controls everything, there is nothing else to be controlled. Infinite mind being all, must know all there is to know about everything. Finite human sense has no grasp of the term everything. There is no material everything. Then you are dealing with infinite God, with heavenly things all the time. That is the only reason that you can understand them and deal with them correctly, and also the only reason that they so readily appear to you. Subheading: The Omnipresent Availability of Intelligence. An interesting illustration of the omnipresence of intelligence in its infinite variety is graphically portrayed in the phenomenon of mediumship. A medium may have had what she calls no educational advantages. Her speech may be ungrammatical and her whole bearing uncultured, but she will assure you that as a medium she can go into a trance and become the channel through which Emerson or some other departed scholar can deliver a message to you. In the condition called a mediumistic trance, her language will become that of a cultured person with no trace of illiteracy. But on coming out of the trance, she will resume her former uneducated state. In a similar way, with no knowledge of German but believing herself to be controlled by the spirit of Goethe, she may speak German fluently while in the trance. Now, do you think that either Emerson or Goethe had any knowledge of the medium or of her effort to transmit messages from him? Yet that effort is not necessarily trickery. The medium may be, and often is, perfectly honest in believing in her own supernatural powers. But what explanation does Christian Science give to this phenomenon? Christian Science declares that there is one God, one mind, one infinite intelligence, and that is omnipresent. This intelligence must, therefore, be the intelligence of all, and must embrace within itself all knowing, all language, all culture, all expression, infinite and perfect diction. This infinite intelligence holds within itself all that is meant by Emerson or Goethe, or by any other term used to express identity, because there is no place where intelligence is not. This is true irrespective of the avenue or appearance through which its presence is interpreted. Jesus said, "If these should hold their peace, the stones would immediately cry out." Jesus knew that God, intelligence, is not limited to any particular avenue of expression, but that to him every possibility is everywhere present. Then why should it be considered charlatanism for a medium to rid herself of one ignorant belief about herself through taking on another ignorant belief which she calls a trance? It is simply a case of self-mesmerism, in which she exchanges a belief in ignorance for a belief that by means of mediumship she can express culture and greater intelligence. There is nothing mysterious or abnormal about this, because intelligence being omnipresent, she always possesses qualities that seem to be manifest only as a result of what she calls going into a trance. The medium determines her own limitations. God puts no limitations upon her. After all, didn't he say, "Son, all that I have is thine, and all mine are thine, and thine are mine," are eternally the dicta of mind. The foolishness of mediumship lies in believing that one must go into a trance in order to express qualities that are eternally present, but which are erroneously supposed to come only from academic education. Believing this, however, is no more observed than it is for a group of sane and otherwise intelligent people to think that by taking a few cocktails they can exchange uninteresting diffidence for witty and enjoyable companionship. The only difference between a belief in a cocktail and a belief in a trance is that one is believed to be a material stimulus and the other a self-imposed mental stimulus. But in reality, there is no difference between them, for matter is non-intelligent and of itself can accomplish nothing. Mind holds within itself all wit, humour, and enduring vivacity, and because mind is omnipresent, these qualities belong to all creation. Understanding this, you are a law unto yourself, and will never be tempted to believe that mediumship, a cocktail, or any other artificially induced stimulus can be of any assistance to you. You will then express spontaneously every desirable quality without experiencing disagreeable after effects. Jesus, at the age of 12, told the learned Sanhedrin things that had been hidden from the foundation of the world, thereby causing them later to demand, "How knowest this man letters, having never learned?" By this, as well as by taking his tax money from the fish's mouth, and again by feeding the multitude with 5 loaves and 2 fishes, Jesus proved the omnipresence of mind, and that God always appears to man in the language that man can best understand, and that will best promote his happiness and success. Subheading: The False Must Be Replaced by the True. The reason immortal mind governing all must be acknowledged as supreme in the physical realm, so called, as well as in the spiritual, is because there is no physical realm. Every erroneous presentation, thought, or activity has to be reduced to its common denominator, malicious mind, and then replaced by divine mind. This is equally true even about every word that is used. Take, for example, the word thief. You know the term thief means one who robs. Are you not a thief, then, if you allow evil to continue as consciousness to you, and so cause you to rob God, the one mind, of its allness, of the glory, honour, dominion, and power everlastingly due its holy name? What replacing then is necessary? Separated from infinite good by acknowledging something unlike good, unlike God, the all in all, you find yourself a thief. What is the true sense of the word thief? The sense that destroys the supposition of a consciousness apart from the one consciousness. Is it not the understanding that mind, the all-in-all, holding to itself all that is, necessarily takes to itself all that there is, and so becomes the true thief, even as it becomes the true murderer, by being the destruction of all that is unlike itself. Does not this understanding spontaneously destroy all desire for anything but what is yours already, the one mind being your mind, with its infinity of good? The purpose of these questions is simply to learn where we stand and what we are doing. You know that malicious mind appearing as matter is appearing in its crudest form of operation. That is why you always reduce matter concepts to their source, malicious mind, in order to discover their real meaning. In the final analysis, this malicious mind operates as a law of jealousy, anger, hatred, and revenge to hurt and harm you. It operates as pure suggestion, appearing as a law of relapse, as a law of reversal, and so forth. These characteristics and claims of evil have absolutely nothing to do with persons, places, or things, even though voiced by such, for they are only this so-called suppositional mind seen in its essence as pure evil. You destroy the false sense of these terms with the true sense, with the qualities of divine mind, and then evil is proved to be nothing. The negation is given back to God. Subheading: The Law of Relapse Illustrated, Analyzed, and Annulled. You understand what the law of relapse is, and you remember that some time ago there was published a number of books and articles, attacks apparently on Mrs. Eddy, vicious attacks, ostensibly fortified by numerous references. How was that accepted by the unenlightened thought? Naturally, as an attack on Mrs. Eddy. But what did you, as the metaphysician, say about it? You recognized at once that it was not an attack on Mrs. Eddy at all. All such attacks were met and answered completely 25 years ago. They were, at that time, handled and destroyed. And therefore, you were not deceived into thinking that because the same appearance accompanied this effort, that it had actually anything to do with the claim. You did not bow down to the appearance, even for a moment, just because the lie seemed to be clothed in the language of the former attacks levelled at the personality of Mrs. Eddy, any more than you would accept the action of a man swimming on dry boards under hypnotic influence as really settling the fact of his being in the water. You turned from the appearance at once, and on analysing the situation, you realised that the claim of a personal attack had been destroyed years ago. Then you knew that the real claim of this malicious mind was that it was operating hypnotically as a law of relapse. Not relapse, but a law of relapse, in contradistinction to mind's eternal law of progress, and you immediately handled the claim from that standpoint. What was the result? These books, after a large sale in the beginning, died down to the point where, it is said, only a comparatively few copies are selling today. You do not think that the demand of this so-called human mind ceased in its desire for that sort of fallacious reading, do you? It was your understanding of what the real claim was and the handling of it that destroyed it, nothing else. You knew, as a metaphysician, that you could never heal a case by handling the same symptoms a second time after that case with those symptoms had once been healed and destroyed through Christian Science. The second appearance of the symptoms could never be the same claim. After being healed, the same symptoms could only come as an entirely new disease, as a so-called law of relapse. When a claim is once destroyed, you never pay the slightest attention to any symptom appearing as that condition again. As you know, you bend your energies then toward understanding the oneness and allness of mind, to realizing that mind's eternal law of progress is ever operative, and that there is no malicious mind to operate hypnotically as a law of relapse. There was only one reason why the demand for those books ceased. That was because the hypnotism was destroyed. One on the side of truth is a majority. You have proved it in sickness. You do not have a single case of sickness in which the entire world does not believe, because the mind that declares for that sickness is the mind of the whole world, and therefore all mortals accept what that mind is and believes. The law of relapse is the impersonal operation of that mind in its phase of pure evil, and it is powerless to continue to appear to or to hurt or harm the mind that knows its nothingness. Subheading: The Final Depression. We are today at the standpoint of experience where all Bible prophecy is culminating. All the pyramidal records and measurements are coming to an end. The final so-called period of depression is at hand. What appears as the present economic depression may have little relationship, in one sense of the word, to the depression portrayed in the pyramid. For the present financial depression is only the so-called human mind swinging backward and forward like a pendulum, as it has constantly done in the past. It is simply the often recurring states of mortal mind which act, react, and then come to a stop. The depression indicated in the pyramid, however, and the struggle foretold in the apocalypse, is the fearful depression of doubt which asks, is there a God? It is expressed in men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth. The mortal loves to grapple with economic and financial depressions. Such conditions never appall him, for he enjoys the conflict which brings out his latent ability. Jesus knew this. What he was referring to in the above quotation was the terrible blank in the mind of the mortal who, look where he will, can find no hope, no joy, or satisfaction in anything, no God. You have doubtless felt this depression, and may have thought it was caused by the financial disturbances, but in this you were mistaken. It is the deep heart sickness of the world that is being felt. It is this malicious mind in its final supposition operating as your mind. In destroying the claim impersonally, as having nothing whatever to do with any person or condition, but as pure hypnotic suggestion, having no reality, you will find it gone. Subheading: Evil, Neither Person Nor Thing. What would cause a Christian Scientist to turn his gaze, even momentarily, to medicine or for physical help, or to drinking or to smoking, in order to satisfy his incompleteness, or possibly even to the contemplation of suicide for relief? What could make him turn either to the right hand or to the left, or even think of turning, except the subtle suggestion of malicious mind acting as pure hypnotism? This malicious mind that hides behind a personal sense of life can be destroyed only by one's being alone with the one mind and establishing the real science of being. Evil can never be handled as person, as oneself, or as someone else. As we read in the Bible, "Let thine eyes look right on, and let thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand, nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil." That's Proverbs 4. If you think you are depressed because some person does not treat you kindly, or something is not going well, your hands are immediately tied. It is not some person or something that is the trouble. It is always the one malicious mind acting as hypnotic suggestion and appearing under the guise of some person or something. As you have already seen, this malicious mind can seemingly appear as a law of relapse or the law of the reversal of truth which you declare. It can appear as envy, jealousy, discontent, and other qualities of incompleteness. But you are not tempted by this malicious suggestion to think of it as something external over there, because you understand what the claim is. Believing that there is something over there, in other words, a third, you are powerless, and it can then defy you. Subheading: you have full authority. The sick cannot be healed metaphysically, in other words, understandingly, if there is anything apart from the one mind. Either what you have established here is the truth, or the truth of Christian Science is a dream. If you have ever made a demonstration of any kind, you did it through the power of mind, and solely because mind is all in all. And if mind can do one little thing, it can do all. There can be only mind or matter, not both. And you know that it is mind because you recognize yourself as conscious being, thus having the witness within yourself that consciousness, mind, is, and that this is all that is. With only one mind, this mind is yourself, the self, the being of you. You are the one Christian Scientist. You are the one activity of mind. Without his expression, God would be powerless. Is it all in your hands? Of course it is, and you have full authority. There is no one to say you nay. What you say stands. As we read in the Bible, "So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it." Mrs. Eddy proved that with regard to Mr. Fry. She acted as God, and so made herself not God, but as God, godlike. Then his word was her word. It is your word also. The burden of proof that Christian Science is science rests on Christian Scientists, rests on you as the one Christian Scientist. Then how much power have you? Infinite power. It is not a question of your power being limited. You always express all power. When you say, "I am weary, I am sick, I am discontented, I wish it were all over," which side are you on? You carry the side with which you place your power, whether with truth or with error. As Mrs. Eddy writes, the Krishna scientist is alone with his own being and with the reality of things. That applies just as much to the suppositional mind as to the reality, the one mind. You are alone every moment with what you accept as your consciousness. There is nothing, therefore, that can oppose itself to your word. You know that truth is, but in spite of that knowing, that understanding, do you, as the Christian scientist, often act as though you had to consult God as to whether or not you had the right to heal all disease? Do you have to consult God and receive his consent when you act as God as good, or are you the very presence of God? Jesus declared, I and my Father are one. The mind that is God is your mind, now and always. Subheading, there is no law of death. Are you determined to live, or are you consenting to death? Have you anything to say about it? Mrs. Eddy told Calvin Fry that his duty was to live, and she proved it. Is not God forever saying, make you a new heart and a new spirit, for why will ye die, O house of Israel? For I have no pleasure in the death of him that dieth. Wherefore turn yourselves and live ye. That is from Ezekiel chapter 18. Have you anything to say about whether you will get old or not? You know physicians of today are frankly saying that old age is a disease and has nothing to do with years, and it is just like any other disease. So age, increasing years, can no longer be held as harmful. Human belief finally had to make this admission because it had already for some time past established as a fact of this human mind that this body, due to the replacing of its cells, is never over 7 years old. Years means experience, and experience is always valuable and life-giving, never destructive. Does hypnotism say that you feel that you are getting old? Remember, then, that the very mind that says you are getting old is the same mind that says your body is never more than 7 years old. Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? The acceptance of old age is just the same whether you say that somebody over there is getting old, or that someone here, right at home, is getting old. If you see trees, animals, or anything as getting old, are you not accepting old age? Nothing can grow old. If you accept the suggestion that things are growing older and older in the sense of becoming infirm, then death must finally arrive. As the Christian scientist, you know that there is no law of death. Then why bow down to the suggestion of such law? The only law of death there is the law of life, which is the law of death to everything unlike itself. Subheading, the advancing thought of the world. Professor Compton, one of the great physicists of the world, professor of physics in the Chicago University and a Nobel Prize winner, has lately advanced a wonderfully clear deduction, which in substance entirely nullifies the old idea of evolution. He shows the infinitesimal possibility of matter developing into a world with the infinite variety that we find about us, which variety must self-evidently imply that there is an intelligence directing it. He also fearlessly declares that consciousness may persist after the brain is destroyed. The advanced thought of the world is rapidly abandoning the old idea of evolution and basing its newfound hopes and opinions on consciousness as the source of being. The progress of material science is amazingly gratifying as well as amusingly interesting to the one who knows the truth of Mrs. Eddy's discovery in 1866, that all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Sir James Jeans, in the closing chapter of his book The Mysterious Universe on page 158, makes these illuminating statements. The old dualism of mind and matter seems likely to disappear, not through matter becoming in any way more shadowy or insubstantial than heretofore, or through mind becoming resolved into a function of the working of matter, but through substantial matter resolving itself into a creation and manifestation of mind. As he writes, mind no longer appears as an accidental intruder into the realm of matter. We are beginning to suspect that we ought rather to hail it as the creator and governor of the realm of matter, not, of course, our individual minds, but the mind in which the atoms out of which our individual minds have grown exists as thoughts. What then is there to matter, as such, if it is the product of mind? Must it not necessarily take upon itself all the qualities of mind, which include not one single quality of matter as matter? You are continually travelling in one direction or the other. You are ever going toward matter or mind. Nothing can stop you. You are the one who decides which direction it shall be. You are the one who declares thus far and no farther to everything erroneous that presents itself as your thought. You understand that that which trails the wings of spiritual soaring in the dust is the believing that over there truth does not apply, but over here it does. Could truth be here without embracing there? Subheading: Health Omnipresent. When told that someone had been healed by an operation, or by medicine, or by some other means, have you ever analyzed the tendency of your thought? As a Christian Scientist, do you think such healing to be only a belief of health which will not last? Is there more than one state of health? Is not that health identically the same health that is present everywhere? Then is it not your duty to do as Jesus did, and to confirm all healing so that nothing else obtains as consciousness? When the woman touched the hem of Jesus' garment, she believed that the touching of the garment brought her health. Jesus, knowing health to be omnipresent, made that health permanent by confirming it. He said to the woman, "Thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace." The woman's method of seeing health was through a superstitious and finite faith, beautiful in its trust in goodness, but wholly lacking in understanding. But Jesus' confirmation was infinite understanding. Jesus never compromised his pure sense of the real and spiritual with material ways and means, and it was this that made him mighty. Had he for an instant stooped to accept the material modus of gaining health, he could not have confirmed the feeble groping with the eternal facts of health. The metaphysician must corroborate every bit of healing that he hears. Healing is always the appearing of the one omnipresent health. Confirm health because health is. The process whereby it is seen does not confuse you. The health is ever the same health. Get into the way of taking command of every situation. As we read in the Bible, "All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth," in Matthew chapter 28. So, if I want to see health everywhere, I am glad to see it everywhere and rejoice at the appearance of health under any and all circumstances. I must confirm health, no matter how seen by my understanding, as did Jesus. Subheading, Must I Die? Because death is not of God, even though all seem to die or seem to think that they have to die, do you or I have to die? Certainly not. No one is obliged to die. There is no law of death. Mrs. Eddy only seemed to disappear because, as the revelator, she appeared to the unenlightened thought to be the revelation, and nothing could continue to stand between the revelation and mind. Jesus was the master metaphysician. He was the one and only example, and showed not only what could be done, but what must be done by one and all. That was not Mrs. Eddy's office. Her visible presence and example is not a necessity to her revelation, now that the revelation, science and health, is established as consciousness. Since I now, of myself, know why Christian Science is true, it would not destroy that assurance and understanding in the least if the Bible and science and health seemed to vanish. Because for the very reason that I am now dependent understandingly upon my own communion with mind, I can never be deprived of anything that can be of the slightest value to me. Thus I am forever assured of having all that the Bible and science and health mean and reveal. It is a very foolish, unappreciative, conceited belief to call oneself a Christian scientist and not constantly corroborate one's understanding of mind by a careful study of science and health in the Bible. No one could read what Mrs. Eddy has written on any subject without being enlightened and assured and reassured on his mind journey. Christian Science, being the word of infinite power and authority, the word of God, instantaneously heals all disease. With Christian Science, you do the same. You cannot forget that. You must do it. The power of mind is utterly unlimited. The Lord's hand is not shortened that it cannot save, as we read in the Bible. God is not man that he should lie, neither the Son of Man that he should repent. Hath he said, and shall he not do it? Or hath he spoken, and shall he not make it good? That comes from Numbers chapter 23. There is no place where mind is not. So there is no place where the voice of mind is not heard. And that mind is your mind. So you cannot be less than all-powerful in world affairs. Act from this standpoint, else you are steadily marching toward the grave. Death will not and cannot advance you a single step. You now know all that death could teach you. You know the whole unreality of a mind apart from God. Why not then today and every day act from the standpoint of vigor, freshness, inspiration and genuine interest in everything and everybody? There's no excuse for not doing this. It will be a deep disappointment to you if you die. You will awake to say, I knew better, and you will not excuse yourself for the mistake. You will not enjoy the failure. Subheading, The Opportunity to Prove Oneness with Mind. Now, this minute, is the time to have no enemy on earth except a malicious mind, and that one suppositionally. Husbands, hear this, and remember how slight a word or deed may renew the old trysting times. All are husbands, all are wives. There is no excuse for bickering and quarrelling. Mind is all in all to you. Then who is there with whom to quarrel? Opportunity before each one, every instant, is the opportunity which, if taken advantage of, will advance him as nothing else can, for it gives him the opportunity to prove his oneness with mind. As we read in Science and Health, the purpose and motive to live aright can be gained now. This point one, you have started as you should. You have begun at the numeration table of Christian science, and nothing but wrong intention can hinder your advancement. Working and praying with true motives, your Father will open the way. Who did hinder you that you should not obey the truth? Are you really a worker? Then remember, you are vitally interested in all. Do not wait for a more convenient season to express the power of man as the activity of mind. It will never come. Today is the day to prove it, and to prove it everywhere. In doing this, you demonstrate that you are not the fool that has said in his heart, "There is no God." You know in whom you have believed, and you fulfill in your life the truth of the saying attributed to Mrs. Eddy, "Humility is the door, honesty is the way, and spirituality is the summit." End of the address.